Hello, everybody, and welcome to Geek Actually, episode 135 for the 11th of June, 2011. It's the 11th of June, Josh.
Wow.
We're halfway through the year already. What the hell's going on here? I am Dave McVeigh, and this is Josh Philpott. And as I just tweeted out, this is the podcast that's really about nothing at all. Well, we try. We try our best. We try our best. You haven't got headphones, so you're not going to be able to hear any video as it plays, but that's all right. You don't care. this is our old tech show and our old after show mushed together to create this new show, which is kind of a mishmash of tech and geek and basically anything that we want to talk about. There's no real rules here, and sometimes we're going to talk about good things and bad things. And in fact, one of the first things we're going to talk about is what we call the impending robot apocalypse. But first, before we do that, we do have some feedback. Feedback for this week is, we only have one this week, which is from our friend Corin. You remember Corin? Corin is our German friend who berated us for making fun of geeks and then turned around and said, no, but I actually love your shows, and then sent us one last week. And we said that if you were ever in Australia, we would invite you on the show.
Yeah.
Well, let's have a look at her email, or his email. Why do I keep saying Corin's girl? I don't know. For some reason, Corin sounds like it would be a really good girl's name. I don't mean to offend you at all, Corin, but that's...
Wow, you just... Every time he makes an email, you gotta...
I know,
take
but I love him.
Him.
I love him. Okay. He says, hi to both of you.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay, right. We're back on. We're on track now. He says. I see that I will probably forever have the stigma of the guy who wrote the hate mail as you referred in your show 2 weeks ago. But I am not a hater, but was only troubled or confused about the format. Well, that's true. We have no idea what the format is on this show. So it's like, okay. Back then, I had a listening spree and consumed about 60 episodes of Geek Film and After Show in 2 weeks. Jesus. That is bad for you. Don't do that.
We have health warnings on this stuff, man.
You could hurt yourself doing something like that. All in the correct order, in quotes. Wow, that is dedicated, I tell you what.
That's difficult.
In retrospect, I guess that the different formats of the three shows, he says three shows, but you know that's a typo. Damn you, autocorrect. Geek Actually has a mixture of serious topics and fun. Film Actually has a really serious show about film, and the After Show was a total laughter. Was not easy to separate. This occurred to me.
Really not.
No, it's not really. That's why you shouldn't watch them all together. It's dangerous. This occurred to me when I listened to the Geek and Film, where the Geek show was again total fun. Now, don't get me wrong. Oh, that's when we used to have it all in one show, right? Of course. Film Actually has its fun too, but because film is your baby and your passion, you are very serious in that show. Yes, we are. That is our first love, basically. Yeah. And tech is our mistress. How's that? That sounds good. Yeah. That's very poetic, I thought. All right, now with this out of my mind. Okay, cool. Let's move on to my last mail. I feel honored that you read my feedback and happy that you shared my feelings about the hilarious ending of the show. My PS had a typing error. I did not mean hind, but hint. Yeah, we kind of figured that, which probably would have made more sense. I am sorry for my writing does not seem to be very understandable. I will try better this and next times. This would be my first try. Onto the actual guts of this email. It says, when I heard that you invited me to the show, I was stunned and troubled myself for what I got you into, because different to our friend from Canada who exposed his GPS location very early, my submissions to your occasional film actually would not be disqualified for my geolocation, but rather by my lack of funniness. I guess you know what that means. I am already in Australia and actually almost a neighbor. So maybe you want to reconsider your invitation, smiley face. Do you really know what you're getting into? Corin, the invitation stands. You want to come in and do a show with us, you are more than welcome to come in and say hi to everybody out there in Geek Actually land. I think that is terrific that you're here, okay? I can't guarantee you a whole show, but we'll get you on and say hi. Now, about the ban on mobiles. Now, this is the reason why we're actually reading this. About the ban of mobiles, DECT phones, and Wi-Fi from European schools. Remember that one?
Yeah.
The structure of the European government and of who does what... The structure of the European government and who does what and who has which power is quite complicated. This is due to the history of the EU and the fear of all the country leaders of the EU to lose power over decisions in their own country. The group who wrote this proposal have no power at all.
Wow.
Okay. Good Lord, we are lucky. They handed this proposal to the European Council, in which all 47 members of the EU are represented. The Council has no power over the Parliament and does no political decisions. They are not elected by the public. Of course, though, they try to influence politics. Needless to say that this proposal is total nonsense. Okay. Okay, this was what I wanted to tell you in the very little time I had left, but all my duties and this fucking flat hunting. Wish me luck. I have to move out on Friday, Saturday this week. All the best, Corin. Thank you very much for writing to us, Corin.
I've been there, man. I've done that recently. The thing that's going to suck for you more than anything is having no internet. It is a pain in the ass.
Unless you organize it all beforehand, but that's always hard to do because you haven't got the phone and everything yet. But yes, no, it is a pain. Moving is a pain, and we may be having to do it sooner rather than later from this place. I'm not sure what's happening at this point. I will keep you informed. It's new to me too. So we will keep everybody informed. Hopefully it won't affect any Geek Actually output or anything like that. But it will be an interesting transition. The next 2 months are going to be very interesting. Let's put it that way. Whoa. Okay. Now, all right. We may not have this luxurious studio to work from. We may have to make some compromises, but we'll see how we go. All right. So on to the impending robot apocalypse. This week, Steve Wozniak was in the news.
Good Lord.
And I love Steve Wozniak. Steve Wozniak, for those who doesn't know, is the co-founder of Apple and the inventor of the Apple IIe, amongst other innovations from Apple, who is kind of a funny little guy, and he's got a really good book, if you want to read his biography, called I Was, which is a really good book, and it shows you what a genius this guy is. But he is a little bit out there sometimes. But he actually says that we've already lost the war. All right. And now his quote is, "We're already creating the superior beings. I think we lost the battle to the machines long ago. We're going to become the pets, the dogs of the house." He said, "All of a sudden, true artificial intelligence will creep up on mankind like an accident. Every time we create new technology, we're creating stuff to do the work we used to do, and we're making ourselves less meaningful, less relevant."
Yeah.
No truer words have been said, Mr. Wozniak.
Never gonna hear an argument from me.
Now, I actually love Mr. Wozniak, and I actually love technology, but it's true. Every time we teach a robot how to use a knife or be a pinpoint archer, that's one step further to the robots one day turning around saying, "Who are you again?"
Yeah, no, it's more that whole thing of what exactly do you do that's important.
Like
it's,
and then when you say, "But I made you," they'll say, "Yeah, but I can make myself now."
Yeah,
you know. So,
or even more to the point, it's like, "What are you contributing?"
Now, James from Melbourne in our chat room says, why do we always see computers and robots as haters? Does anyone else remember Electric Dreams?" If you remember Electric Dreams, now, the reason why this is actually is a good comment from you, by the way, we go out live every Saturday. We have a chat room. That's who we're referring to. Go to geekactually.com/live from 12 o'clock every Saturday. Now, with that out of the way, yes, I do remember Electric Dreams really well. And if you remember Electric Dreams, he actually went crazy and tried to take over the house and tried to destroy them. So even Edgar, his name was Edgar, played by the voice was Bud Cort, who was a terrific. He was in Harold and Maude. But if you remember, it didn't all end well for Edgar. So even Electric Dreams wasn't such a nice, fluffy film. Yeah. What is Electric Dreams? Electric Dreams is a movie. So go back and have a look at it. It's a mid-80s movie, Giorgio Moroder soundtrack. I actually just watched it the other night. I can't believe you brought that up. All right. So, just to give you an idea of the impact that Electric Dreams had on me, my PC's name is Edgar, because you know how I name my computers. My PC has been named Edgar since the mid-80s.
If that motherfucking thing starts creeping out on me,
it's going
to
come out.
I'm going to take a sledgehammer to it. I'm just letting you know that, Dave.
And for those who are curious, this computer is Erica, and my laptop is Lilith. So, you know, I'd name all my computers. So, and my wife's computer is Grace, and we won't go on. Okay. All right, we won't go on.
We get the point.
All right, so let's talk about the two events this week. Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
Yeah, no, you go first.
All right, I'll go first. All right, so mine won't be that long. Most people already know what's going on in this world. It's been pretty well covered in the media, but Apple had its WWDC, Worldwide Developers Conference, keynote. It was a week-long developers conference where everybody got together, and we're assuming that developers got together and talk about this whole patent thing as well at some point during the equation. But it always opens with a big keynote of the next big thing from Apple. Now, usually WWDC is the launch of the new iPhone, but there's no iPhone this time around.
I know. All my customers are going to feel so stupid.
I know. It's stock. It's just staggering. There is talk that the iPhone 5 will probably come out end of year. So I would imagine the iPhone 5, my prediction, and I could be wrong, but my prediction is, you know, their September announcement is always the iPod announcement. I reckon iPhone's going to be rolled into that because let's face it, there's not so much they can talk about iPods anymore. There's only so much you can do with an iPod nowadays. So I think it's going to become, that will become their mobile conference, and that'll be where they do all that sort of stuff. Anyway, so, but what they did announce, they were very software-driven this time. They announced OS X Lion, and Lion has a whole, they listed off 10 new features of Lion. For those who aren't Mac users, this is completely irrelevant to you. But if you are a Mac user, things like multi-touch gestures have been built into the operating system now. Now, for a laptop user, this is perfect because your trackpad's multi-touch. If you're a desktop user, the back of the new Magic Mouse has some gesturing, but you really need to get one of those multi-touch pads. You know, those little, what are they called? The Magic Pads or whatever they're called?
The trackpads.
And you basically get lots of gestures like side swiping and multi-finger gestures. And so basically they're bringing touch to Lion. Full screen apps. Apple's been on this big thing about full screen apps. And I think it's so funny because Windows has had full screen apps since the dawn of time. You hit the little button at the top and it puts it full screen. Apple's only really discovering full screen because it's always worked within Windows. And so now they're saying, ooh, full screen apps is good because, of course, they're modeling it all on iOS. So full screen apps is going to be built in. Most of their applications will be full screen apps, and the APIs are there so that everybody can make their apps full screen. Mission control is probably one of the biggest things. If you are an Apple user at all, you've been using Expose and Spaces, which is just ways of managing your desktops. Mission control brings it all into one thing. It's actually really nice, and it works really well. The idea of you basically use a gesture to swipe into it, and then you can manage your spaces, your expose, everything from one screen, which is kind of nice. Oops, I've just started the opening credits again for no apparent reason. My arm bumped the keyboard. The App Store is being revamped, remodeled, and of course it's built directly into Lion. At the moment, it's actually been...
It's been updated for the phones already. They started it.
Right, they've already started it now. The App Store, this is the Mac App Store for Mac applications. It's been an add-on for Snow Leopard. It was kind of like their testing ground only on Snow Leopard. It is built directly into Lion, has much better integration, and it also features a lot of these iCloud features, which we'll come back to in just a second. Anyway, it goes on and on. One of the two features that I really like are auto-saving. This is a feature like on the iPad where as you work on something, it's just constantly saving it in the background so that if you just close the app and come back, it's exactly where you left it. Even to the point where if you've got text highlighted and stuff on screen, it comes back with that highlighted. I mean, the whole bit. It just literally locks each version, which leads to the next feature, which is versioning. And versioning means that it actually stores every save of that document all the way back. Now, people say, but what, isn't it going to take up huge amounts of hard drive space? No, because it actually saves the metadata of it. So it saves the main version and then all the data of just the changes.
Yeah.
So what you can do is when you go into versions, it brings up a Time Machine type interface and you can literally scroll through it, find which one you want to get the changes from, bring it to the front, and you can then, this is the part that I like, it's all live. So if there's a piece of text or a picture or something like that in a previous version you want to bring to your new version, you can actually cut and paste from the version into the other document. So it's all live. So that's actually really sweet. It also has live resuming now. So like an iPad, if you just turn it off, like if you put it into sleep, walk away and come back, when you come boot back up, everything is exactly where you left it. All web pages you were in are open. All documents are open, everything. So it's just basically a live resume straight from sleep. So look, I think Lion is going to be a massive upgrade. And the most important part of all of this is it's only $29. In Australia, that's $31 it works out to, which doesn't make sense considering our dollar is worth more, but let's not go there. $31 for a full OS upgrade, and it's through the App Store. So basically, you just click on it, it downloads it, and you go and install. Now, this opens up a whole bunch of questions for us more tech-related people, which is how do we get boot disks and stuff? Because we won't have a bootable CD or DVD
wouldn't
to play
you
with.
Just restore your old system and then
re-download
Lion.
Yeah, you could do that, or I'm assuming built into Lion has got to be some way of making USB boot keys or something like that. We haven't seen enough of it yet to actually know that. And the other feature that of course they've completely reinvented Mail, which is about time because Mac Mail has always been a bit weak. So they've completely reinvented Mail and brought it up to being as good as any other Mail client, which is like you sit there and go, about time.
Yeah. Has it integrated calendars yet?
I believe so, and we'll get to iOS in a minute because they've rewritten the Mail program on that as well, and they've rewritten the calendars on that as well. So the iOS stuff is pretty interesting. One feature I really do like on Lion is a feature they're calling AirDrop, and it's peer-to-peer networking. Now, this is only Mac to Mac because you have to have the AirDrop app, but there's no...
What a surprise.
It's true. But there's no setup. There's no pairing, there's nothing. There's all you literally do is if you are sitting next to another Mac user, start AirDrop, it automatically sees any Mac around you, and you can literally just copy files to and from each other's AirDrop folder. You still have to have permissions. So you would send it. The person says, you've got something coming in. Do you want it? You can accept or deny and so forth. But you can literally just copy files.
That's not going to create problems.
I can see a few problems with that. But anyway, so that's Lion.
I see libraries becoming what we call Wi-Fi tennis. basically, you just start sending files to people and see their reactions to it.
And so I see all these people panicking going, what does this mean?
send them a file called virus.ex.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, it won't hurt a Mac user.
I know, but they won't know that.
No, but you could send them that DMG file, the Mac Defender, or whatever it is that's going around. By the way, Mac users, you have a piece of malware out there. Be careful.
Oh, I dealt with my first one.
Oh, really?
Yep.
The new
ridiculously destroyed computer. Had to build it from the ground back
up. Oh, man. Yeah, yep, no, that's the thing. And there is now a fix for
it. Everyone that walks into my store going, mixed against viruses. Yeah, well, fuck you, because I've dealt with it.
Okay,
now.
But the difference is, what we can say is now we can say is that Macs do, well, they don't get viruses, they get malware at this point. We haven't had a real Trojan hit yet. Mm-hmm. But the point is that they do, but the difference is 270,000 for PC and 2 for Mac.
So, it's 7 total now.
Oh, is there 7 now? 7 okay, total. So it's jumping
and
up.
And that's
there.
An increase from 2 last year.
What I love, though, is that Apple actually released a fix through the update that actually took care of Mac Defender, looked for it, killed it, and the Mac Defender people actually wrote a fix for their software, which immediately countered the fix. So
exactly.
It starts.
And this is how it starts, and this is how it's going to continue and eventually get there. But you see, my problem is this, dude. It's like people are like, Macs don't get viruses, blah, blah, blah. But that there, your safety net that people are building with that concept is the same reason that PC people have built up a defense against it. We know now not to open a file.
It's the same argument with inoculation. That's right.
Exactly. We know now not to open an email which just says Microsoft Windows Live and stuff like that. We know not to go in and just download the file inside a file that allows to open immediately. Like, it's a matter of knowing these things.
Okay, first thing you got to do as a Mac user. Go into Safari and turn off the feature that says open safe files.
Yeah.
That is the worst check button that has ever been put on a computer, because that just means that as soon as a disk image comes down, it just opens. Stop it. Turn that off.
Yeah.
Make sure you control whatever is going on. No computer is invulnerable to viruses. And we've said this all along, which is the reason why Macs don't have viruses is because there wasn't a market share for it. There was no reason to attack Macintoshes. Every computer is vulnerable. There are viruses on Linux. There are viruses on Unix. The first virus, in fact, was a Unix virus, which is what Apple is built on. So be aware that there is always going to be virus. Now, Apple has had such market growth over the last 2 years in particular that the virus writers are starting to look at going, you know what? Not only is there an incredibly installed base now, but they are generally more affluent people.
Yeah.
So they want your info now, you know? So,
be careful.
Be careful, because at this point in time, there is no auto-run virus that we're aware of that is available for Mac. You have to install it. So it is the stupidity of the user. But let's face it, we all know that it's the stupidity of the user that gets most viruses on computers.
But then also, it's only a matter of creating smart ways to launch these programs. So if you start making a program called iTunes.dmg, people will download and install it. Why? Because they think it's safe.
Yeah.
And this is the problem. It's like Mac's ecosystem builds the kind of people that will just trust anything that seems Apple.
The ecosystem of the Apple computer, let's face it, are mostly people who are non-technical.
Exactly.
They've built their entire infrastructure is built on the concept of you don't need to know anything. It's just easy. It just works.
Yeah.
Their own slogan, it just works. All right. iOS 5 is the next big one.
Yeah.
iOS 5 actually had some really good features. And one of the features I got to talk about really quickly was kind of one of...
James from Melbourne. Someone said it's like inviting a vampire over to dinner.
very good. One of the features of iOS, which was actually not one of the big features, it was kind of a throwaway, actually made me kind of almost gag on the cup of tea I was drinking, because last week we showed a Microsoft video where they were talking about the new touch interface, and one of the things was the split keyboard, where they said, look, on a tablet you could have a split keyboard. And of course, on the Apple announcement, they did this.
There's one more feature I want to show you, and it's actually a system-wide feature having to do with the keyboard. When we released the original iPhone, we revolutionized the way people would type on multi-touch displays. And we keep on challenging ourselves to make that even better. Well, we have a new variant of the keyboard in iOS 5 for the iPad, which we think people who like to type with their thumbs while holding it are really going to like. In the bottom right, you see the keyboard button. It now has some grab handles. If I just take those and drag it up, it splits it into two.
I love the fact that it moves up and down the screen. That's pretty cool.
But so what it does is it just moves the keys closer to your thumbs on the side. So you can put it wherever you want. It's really nice. And it's persistent for every app in the system. It just stays where you put it.
What an amazing innovation. We only saw it a week ago.
I can't help but think that I've seen this somewhere
before.
Yeah,
and you know what? The funny thing is that we didn't even pick up on it was the fact that they didn't, you know, it's like, because my first thought last week was, oh man, Microsoft must be just kicking themselves going, we can never beat them, you know, because theirs isn't coming out till next year, of course. Ah, I actually found out it's on Honeycomb. Android beat them all. The split keyboard is actually on the Honeycomb tablets. So this split keyboard is nothing new. And why they cheer him for that, I have no idea. Mm. All right. So that was just one of the unsung things. Some of the big things that were announced on iOS, though, were good. First of all, there is a complete revamp to the mail system. Mm. They've actually made it much more multi-featured. They've made Boolean searches in the search fields, and this will search all mail, including what's on the server now, not just on your phone.
Thank God for that
is all we can say. Notifications have been completely rewritten. In fact, they've copied Android in this. They've actually made it a notification center, and notifications now come up as a little bar at the top of the screen, and it doesn't affect anything. And if you click on that bar, it brings in a list of all notifications. One of the things that's pissed off a lot of iOS users is you get that notification, so you swipe to unlock, and the notification goes away.
Yeah.
And you go, what was it? I don't remember. Now you can actually go back and check your notifications. Twitter integration is all throughout the system now. So whether you're in the photos or you're in video or whatever, you can just tweet it straight out of almost everything. So Twitter must be really happy by that. Safari's been revamped. They've added tab browsing. They've added private browsing. So they've added a porn feature.
Oh, wow.
You know, all these things that have been around, you know, they've all been around for a while, but, you know, it's taken a while. The camera app has been rewritten. Now, this is a good plus, and it's about time. These are all features that were in other camera apps, now you actually get it by default, which is, once again, somebody said that. They said they've just put a whole bunch of other app manufacturers out of business with a bunch of their features. Tab browsing, there's lots of browsers out there.
But, you know, isn't there something to sort of like allow those people a little bit of rights here? I mean, like, they're basically Apple's just stolen all these ideas.
Well, yeah, but these are the APIs that are there. It's just that they've kind of written them. I agree with you. I think that they should sit there and give them at least credit for some of the stuff. The camera app uses... first of all, it puts up a grid now. You can actually turn on and off a grid so you can get your composing nicely. It's got hold to lock the focus, which is something that I really like. Because when I touch the focus is great, but then if you move the camera, it refocuses all of it. Yeah. Now you can actually focus on an area, touch and hold, locks the focus and aperture, and then you can move to somewhere else and actually keep going. But the feature that I like the most out of all of them is the fact that the plus... volume control is now the shutter button.
But, yeah, and this I have a huge problem with because they stopped another application.
Camera Plus was actually removed from the shop for doing this because, you, according to their terms and conditions, you weren't allowed to modify the hardware at all. But
my problem with that is, like, they basically just stole that idea.
Pretty much.
Like, no, but not even like cute or funny or haha. No, that's full on.
What actually
plagiarism.
Disturbs me the most about that was the fact that that actually got a cheer when he mentioned it in the keynote.
Yeah.
And everybody cheered that, and it's like, guys, that's not nice, you know? Anyway. So, you know, some of the features on the camera app are good. They have actually improved some of the camera stuff. They've also added photo editing natively, which is something that they damn well needed for a long time, where you can actually crop and modify photos in the camera app. Mail app has been, as I said, we've been rewritten. No PC required. This is something that we've all been waiting for since the dawn of it. They keep calling it the post-PC era with the iPad and the iPhone, but they haven't been. You still needed a PC to sync. You still needed a PC to even turn it on for the first time. Mm-hmm. Not anymore. It is now self-standing. When you turn it on, it just says, what do you want to do? You know, and you can actually set it up from there. It will take updates through the air, and it does delta updating, which means it only updates the stuff that's changed. It doesn't have to download huge chunks of update. So it does delta updating, all wireless syncing, and this, of course, is all attached to the iCloud, which we'll come to in just a second, and so forth. So, yes, it is now a wireless device. It is now, you can now buy an iPad and not have a computer. which is a really, really interesting move.
Well, actually, no. Technically, you can't because at least for the next couple of months, they'll all be launching with old software, which means that...
Oh, yeah, okay. After the fall. The suggestion is it's probably going to be August, September that this comes out. iOS Lion is out in July. iOS 5 is out August, September. Okay, so we're still a few months off this. The betas are now out. They gave everybody at the developers conference a copy of it. So they're now actually working on it. Game Center has been completely revamped, so you can now actually do things like online gaming through it and social gaming and stuff like that.
Which until they get that right, I'm not even touching it. It's just annoying.
My favorite feature of the day, though, has to be iMessage. There's enough iOS devices out there now to actually make this a viable option, and that is iPad, iPod Touches, iPhones can now all message each other without a telco. So basically over whatever service they're on, if you have an iOS device and your friend has an iOS device, it literally sends just like a text message and you can just message each other. It's just copied very much from BlackBerry Messenger is what it is. So now it's just basically it's an iOS. It's called iMessage and it's just a and you can send photos, you can send links, you can send everything through it. So that is actually one of my favorite features of iOS 5. All right. Let's talk very, very briefly, and then we'll get on to E3. iCloud is this replacement for MobileMe. Anybody who's a MobileMe subscriber now, I got the email the other day, will probably find that they've had their MobileMe extended until
Brad is in the house.
Brad, good on you. Brad is from the formerly from the Movie Fan House and is now from reboundradio.com. Go check out his new site. we'll just plug them
Quick
all.
Plug.
As they, we'll just come all, plug them all as they come through. Now, the iCloud is kind of confusing at this point. It's confused a few people. It actually has six new features. So basically, iDisk and all that stuff is gone as of next year. Right. Yeah. So if you've got MobileMe right now, they're no longer taking new subscriptions. If you just bought MobileMe, they're refunding money or giving you store credit. If you are a long-term MobileMe customer, they've given you free extension until next June. So I get a free 6 months out of them.
Yeah.
And then it's gone. Yeah. Your at me mail account will continue and you'll be given calendar sync and address book syncs. And this is free. iCloud is free for any users. And it's Mac and PC. This is the part that really got me. He said that twice throughout the thing when he was mentioning the iCloud features. He was basically saying Mac or PC, you know? Photo Stream is a new feature. Now, I'm not completely sold on Photo Stream, but basically if you take a photo on your phone, it is immediately pushed to all your devices so that you actually have access to it everywhere. Even on a PC, it goes to your pictures folder. I'm not quite sold on this because it says take a new photo, or if you import photos into like your iTunes, into your iMovie, it will immediately sync over all devices. What if you're importing photos that you don't necessarily want to be streamed everywhere?
But dude, people don't do that.
No, Apple users don't do this, obviously. But we'll have to have a look at this, and there's got to be on-off switches to all of this stuff, I'm sure. We'll see how we go. Now, iTunes was the big one. Now, the beta version of this has already gone out, and Josh was just showing me on his phone. You would have heard us mumbling through that video. We've already seen the little cloud icon. iTunes has just put out an update, so if you're an iTunes user, grab the new update. First stage of this beta is anything you buy on iTunes immediately pushes to all of devices. So if you go into iTunes and buy a song, you will find, if you open your iPhone, that song is already there. If you open your iPad, that song is already there, and so forth. You can turn that feature on and off in case you're worried about bandwidth. So that part of the beta is already existing. Okay. Also, this works with apps as well. So if you bought an app, it is now immediately available for all your devices, your iOS devices, and there's a purchase history button now where you can click on it. So if you've already purchased it and you don't have it on the device, but you go, actually, I wouldn't mind playing that right now, hit that little cloud button. It just pulls it down for free. Great. Works well.
That's absolutely. And look, I mean, this is something that I am going to commend Apple for to no level. This is the sort of stuff that we should have had ages ago.
It's not streaming, which is what some people thought of, might have a streaming service, but I actually like this better. I don't like streaming, quite frankly. So for me, this actually works better. And I commend them. And the best part of this is it's free. It's amazing that it's just free, right? Now, you get 5 gigs of data for your photo streams and so forth. And well, no, I think photo streams actually excluded from the 5 gigs of data, but for your mail and all that stuff, you get 5 gigs of data free. Now, it means iDisk is gone, which means Dropbox is going to get a whole bunch of new use because the iDisk is gone. So that's okay. Now, the feature that is coming is iTunes Match. Now, this is a really, really exciting feature, I think. Now, this does cost money, and it costs the sizable fund of $24.99 a year, which is what we speculated on last year, and you actually had trouble believing that it was going to only be $25 a year. Mm. But it is. It's $25 a year. It's called iTunes Match. What it does is it scans your entire iTunes library. If it has copies of any of the music in your library, whether you bought it from iTunes or not, so whether it's pirated Napster stuff or you ripped it off your CDs or whatever it might be, if it has that album, you get access to the higher bitrate 256K version on iTunes, on the cloud. So then you, on your phone, you can download the better version. If it doesn't have your album, it uploads it. So you have access to that on all your albums. So what it's basically doing is saying, well, rather than you spending days uploading your entire music collection into a cloud like Google or Amazon, if we've got it, you can have it. And if we don't have it, then we'll pull your copy, right? Suits me to the ground. And it says up to 20,000 songs. My first thought was 20,000 songs. What's the size of my library? 18,000 songs in my library. So
shit, I have more than that.
So I actually do manage to squeeze in the 20,000 song limit. I want to know what happens after 20,000 songs. Is there like a different tier you can go into? I don't know.
I mean, I'm well screwed for that. I got like 36,000.
Really? I thought my library was huge and yours is so much bigger.
Seriously.
The future of iTunes Match is staggering, and I think what we will see over the next year is we'll probably start seeing film and television on there as well and all sorts of stuff. So I'm really looking forward to what I – look, I will pay the $25 gladly. Some people have said, why would they do this? Why would they allow you to put your pirated stuff or your CD rips and stuff like that? Let's face it. The music companies aren't making any money off you pirating music. If they can make a little bit of money off of you with $25 a year, then – it's basically amnestying your pirated collection is what it's doing. Let's put it that way. All right, so that's the Apple announcement. The other big thing that was happening almost simultaneously was E3.
Yes.
And what happened at E3, Josh?
Well, look, E3 is always I've been doing this now for about 7-8 years, and I've been doing at least...
In fact, I will actually say that this is our third annual E3 roundup.
For the last probably 3, 4, 5 years, I've been watching it streaming whenever it does, so I watch it live. This year was unfortunately not 100% live, which I'll fix next year, but I was moving, so I had 3G, and 3G chews up a hell of a lot of data when you're pulling down live streaming. But anyway, the important thing of the situation is that the announcements didn't come across quite as we want. And I made an observation this year, which kind of saddens me a little, which is that now that streaming's kind of become the standard, now that E3 is demonstrated live out to everyone worldwide, it panders a lot more than it used to. It's aimed at the lower level consumer. It's aimed at the people that don't know this stuff. Right. So you get a lot more, for lack of a better word, wank in between interesting points. You get a lot of self-abuse from these guys where they're just pointing out things that no one really wants. And also, because it's being aimed at the general public, they don't try and make it sound better than it has to be. They don't try and give it any edge or make it a wow factor. It just becomes a really kind of like fantastical journey. And it's actually really annoying because it's like, we don't want you pandering. We want your product.
Yeah.
That's what we're here for. I don't want to hear about how much better it's going to be. I don't want to see a picture of a very basic piece of technology that isn't even that exciting. What I want is facts, figures, solid information, what it's going to bring to
the
table.
It seems to take an awful long time to get to it all.
But they've cut it out entirely. Like the keynotes used to be 3 hours of information that you would struggle to get your head around. Now they're just giant advertising campaigns. Yeah, yeah. And it's like, guys, pick up your game, show us something decent, because it's just starting to annoy me. But anyway, down to the presentations. First, we started off with Microsoft. Microsoft was showing off more games than anything, trying to push the Kinect aspect. Big failure in my eyes. Do not lead with a technology you're not 100% safe with.
Yeah.
Right? This is a technology that doesn't look wowing or spectacular on stage because realistically, the technology isn't one-to-one. And when technology isn't one-to-one, you just look silly. And a lot of the Kinect stuff just looked really unnecessary or really simple.
Well, I saw a video demo of this new Kinect thing where you can turn anything into a buddy or whatever it's called. So, and the video I saw, of course, was somebody who was turning a giant purple vibrator into a flying bug, you know? But the thing is, he couldn't control it.
No.
Once it was in the air, he's sitting there going, it's telling me to duck, it's telling me to stand, and nothing was happening on screen, you know? Yeah. So. I think Kinect is still not quite there.
Well, look, I mean, the touch technology, the visual technology of pulling something in via a camera, via a 3D image and interacting with it, we're just not ready for it. We just don't have the technology to successfully interact with something like that. And also, we've come to the point where we're trying to do all this wonderful thing that we saw in sci-fi movies, and we have the technology to make it appear on screen and interact with it. The problem is we haven't thought about the most important part first. We need to go back and start with the reality of how to make this experience work for someone who's standing in a living room.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how hard you try, you can't make a game where walking feels like walking.
No.
Because you're basically moving on the spot and you just look ridiculous. And this is the thing. It's like there's immersion is what we're trying to create, but immersion doesn't work until the technology is sound.
Mm.
Then we can start making it work. That doesn't happen with this.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Kinect was pretty much a waste of time. There are a few features that I loved. Anyone that wants to go back and watch the Xbox actual event, you will see him doing a system where he uses a menu interface for Ghost Recon, which involves building weapons. This is probably the strongest piece of Kinect technology I've seen, because by moving his hands outwards, the gun would separate into parts, and he could then pull different parts into it. It was absolutely spectacular. Then they showed gameplay, and it was shit.
Somebody's saying there's now Kinect features in Mass Effect 3?
Yes.
Oh,
Kinect.
God, no.
No, relax. The features aren't necessary. I still don't want to particularly use them, because for me, I'm the kind of person that is usually in my house, and I don't tend to...
That was Callison who said that, by the way.
Yeah.
I should give credit.
The technology allows you to do things like when your cursor is pointing an action, just go Garrus there, and Garrus will run over to that point. So it's a simple, quick means of interface, which does work. I just don't want to particularly talk to my console.
No.
I don't realistically see that working until I feel that the interaction goes a bit more both ways, but that's just me. It is available, and it was probably the only one that kind of worked. But apart from that, Microsoft showed off a bunch of games, but I'll go into games later on. Second up, we had Sony, and I believe you wanted to run the start of the Sony presentation.
Yeah, I thought the Sony presentation was an interesting one. I didn't watch the whole presentation, but I thought... we've been bashing Sony a lot over this last few weeks, and, you know, in some ways they deserve it, in some ways they don't. But I thought when he came out, this was actually probably the most heartfelt thing I think Sony's done so far, and it kind of felt genuine for the first time. You know, I'll play it for you. This is the, what's his name again? The CEO of Sony. What's his name? I can't remember his name. Anyway,
God damn it.
Anyway, it doesn't matter.
I know
the point is that he came out and gave this...
Jack Trin.
Thank you. There you go. He came out and gave this intro to his speech, which I thought was very good.
This isn't the first time that I've come to the stage at an E3 press conference with an elephant in the room. And of course, I'm referring to the PlayStation Network outage. And this is the first opportunity for me to personally address everybody and discuss it a little bit. So my friends who are reporters tell me that there's absolutely nothing in the world that makes their editor's day like controversy and bad news. So to all our esteemed members of the press, I say, you're welcome. To our third-party publishing partners, you guys have been with us for over 15 years making tremendous games. And I know the network outage was costly to you. And what's been incredibly inspiring is your support and your offers to help get things back up to speed. And we wouldn't be where we are today if it wasn't for you. So I thank you very much. To our retail partners, you gave us shelf space when there was no PlayStation brand, and you've given us more than our fair share since 1995 when we launched the original PlayStation. And after just having the best year since PlayStation 3 launched, we're seeing sales of PlayStation 3 exceeding last year's lofty numbers throughout the PlayStation launch. In fact, last week's numbers alone were up 27% over the prior year. Which brings me to the audience that I'm most interested in addressing, and those are our consumers. You are the lifeblood of the company. Without you, there is no PlayStation. And I want to apologize both personally and on behalf of the company for any anxiety that we've caused you. I know we took you away from doing what you enjoy most, connecting and gaming with friends all over the world and enjoying the many entertainment options on PlayStation Network. And it is you that both causes us to be humble and amazed at the amount of dedication and support you continue to give to the PlayStation brand. Network activity is currently at over 90% of the original levels before the network outage. And that is something we absolutely do not take lightly. We are committed more than ever to making sure that the PlayStation Network experience is both entertaining and secure for everybody.
Okay, so that was his apology. And I thought that was, it felt sincere, would be the word. It was the first time I've heard anybody come out from Sony and actually feel like, yeah, we're really sorry this has happened, you know? So no, I give him full props for that.
I think James has got it as well, where he says this is the only apology I've heard that was about saying thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it really does kind of, you know, sit close to you when you think about it. I mean, like, that was initially why I was agreeing with you when we were talking on the show and saying, look, I don't hold them responsible. I don't like the way they went about handling it. Mm. But it's a game service. It's not a lifestyle. And I think that's what some people forget. It's like when this shit happens, they're like, how dare you? Yeah. And I'm just looking at them going, you gave credit card information to a gaming website and they got hacked. It's like a bank being robbed. Mm. Do you run in and start abusing the person at the front counter? It's like, no, shit got stolen. Whatever happened, you can get in contact with Sony. I mean, it's damage control. It's like a city being hit by a freaking tidal wave.
The biggest issue was the way Sony dealt with it. And that was, and it's not the fact that it got hacked. I mean, anybody can get hacked. Yeah. Banks have been hacked. You know what I mean? It's the fact that Sony... I don't know. I don't even know how to word this now. It's the fact that Sony just felt belligerent about the whole thing. It's like, oh, well, it's their fault. You know, it's like, how dare they do this to us? Rather than saying, oh, guys, look, we're really sorry for what we've been doing and what's happened, you know, and we'll try and get this back up as fast as possible. You know, RSA got hacked, according to Calisynth. There you go. Yeah. all right. So did Sony actually then, after this big apology, which was probably the highlight for me, did they then announce anything?
Well, they went through and
other than the fact that their network is almost back.
Well, they went and there was a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm not going to go into everything in detail, but they showed off a couple of features, they showed off a bunch of games, and of course, everybody's favorite thing, which was the Vita, which is the official name now for the new PSP. Had a look, like it. Very excited to play it.
Somebody was saying that there is actually a plug-in media for this, like a cartridge-type system. Is that right? So they're not doing UMDs anymore, obviously. That's gone, but the little discs. But apparently you can still... They're going to offer... I don't know. I could be wrong about this. This is something I heard in passing. They're going to offer games on some sort of media?
I was under the understanding it was still...
I thought it was all... Is it Sony memory cards or something?
I'm just looking through it. Yeah, a flash card.
Flash cards. Okay. Yeah. Well, so it's some sort of media, anyway.
Yeah. So obviously,
number one... I think Vita is a terrible name, by the way.
Yeah, no, me too. There are a bunch of things I like about it. The four-core chipset is amazing. 5-inch OLED screen. Yep. That's nice. Yep. Awesome. Two dual stick...
Yay!
...controls. Fine, fuckily. Jesus
what
Christ.
What was that saying? Anyway, go on. Yeah. I don't think you could ever repeat that, could you?
No. It's been that fucking long, and we've been saying it for that freaking long, and you just kept bringing them out and kept fucking missing the point.
Well, I think it's really amazing when you think at how nice the hardware was for the original PlayStation Portable. I mean, the original PSP was a really nice piece of hardware. Mm. And then to completely screw the pooch with the download one. What was it called? The second generation.
Oh, the Go.
Thank you. Which was such a joke, you know? Yeah. So it's nice that they finally pulled it back and brought us another piece of decent hardware. So
anyway, you've got the handholds around the side. You've got your triggers on the top. You've got two control sticks, which is awesome. You've got a front-facing touch screen. That's fantastic. A rear touchpad. What the fuck? I'm sorry. It is the stupidest piece of technology. I don't care what people say. There is nothing that is going to excite me about being able to touch the back of the console.
Yeah, no, they've been talking about this for a while.
You don't need to have it on the front and the back. Yeah. That's just weird.
They've been talking about that for a while, and I'm still not sold on the idea of sliding my fingers around the back trying to... Because you're going to have to also work in reverse, because it's on the back.
Well, unless they flip the technology standardly.
That's bizarre.
But anyway, my biggest problem is I have ginormous, 6-foot-tall kind of fingers, right? Okay, so I naturally have to put my finger almost to the middle of a normal PSP to be able to hold it. This is going to be so uncomfortable for me. And unless there's some way that you can turn it off, I'm still really not sold on that.
Well, yeah, James from Melbourne says, yeah, but if you haven't used it yet, how can you criticize it? You should be giving things a chance.
No, I'm sorry. No, look.
I was about to agree with him and say, yeah, we'll definitely give it a chance.
No, look, I will give it a chance, but I am saying, based on what I know, based on the fact that it's a similar sizing to the last one, based on the fact that the handholds, which I have seen and have looked at dimensions on this thing, they're supposed to, there's kind of little nooks for your fingers to sit in. But my fingers are very long.
But that's going
to
give you cramps as well if you have to cramp up your fingers into the nooks.
And I can say this because I have had things like the Game Gear and the Lynx and stuff like this. And I know what it's like to try and hold a console when your fingers are like this.
Yeah.
It's not comfortable. Now, this is just a matter of fact. And I am going to give it a chance.
So when do we get to see the Vita?
Yeah, well, that's a question that everybody kind of wants to know.
So I guess, okay, James, we'll give you the benefit of the doubt. We will definitely try it, all right? I'm sure Josh will buy one.
Yeah.
And
well, this is the whole thing, and I will get hands-on time with it. So, and I will be reporting when I actually do. And it's that kind of thing. I'm not saying anything. Okay, things that they have fixed. Bluetooth on it, awesome.
Great.
Cool. Wireless in this time.
Oh, very nice.
Fantastic.
Good.
It's about time.
Oh, look, they joined the 21st century. How nice of them.
And it's NVG cards is what you were looking
NVG
for.
NVG cards,
well.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's going to be a flash format, which is cool. And yes, everybody's saying, well, what about my UMDs? Well, I'm sorry, guys, if you followed history, what happens is when new handheld consoles come out, the other ones you either leave with your old device or move on. Usually we would back support for one system.
Sony didn't even do that, though.
No, and you know what? Fair enough, because I got to say, UMDs, they were fucking stupid.
But not only that, UMDs were a failure. Yes, they were a failure.
Because of the same reason mini discs were. Yeah. If you lock off the formatting and don't let anybody else use them.
Also, let's face it, the idea of a spinning disc in a portable device is a stupid idea.
Yeah, Noddy's saying it's a horrible format, and I, for one, will not miss them. I have a PSP, and I will probably just keep my old PSP in a box and pull out the occasional
game. Or you'll
again.
Trade it with all the games and get the whole new technology.
Well, I could do that and then just get cards.
Yeah.
Just get format cards.
Yeah.
And then, sorry, not even format cards. Get digital content. So just get the PlayStation cards.
Absolutely.
Anyway, we'll figure out something. More importantly, it's an interesting console and it looks amazing. I'm still tossing up at this stage whether I'm going to just wait for this or possibly get the PlayStation phone, because after having hands-on time with it and actually playing it, it's kind of fun.
But it's only PlayStation 1 games, though, yeah? It's not, because I heard it's PlayStation 1 compatible. It's not actually.
Yeah, but it's also a really good phone as well. Yeah. Like, I actually spent some time playing with it and I was like, oh, all right, look, I'm not sold on it. It's a toss up for me at the moment between that and getting the Galaxy S2, Galaxy 2, which is.
What's it called? The Galaxy N or something like that?
No, it's Galaxy S2.
Oh, okay. I thought there was an N in that title somewhere. But
There's multiple versions of it, but this is the one with the giant 4-inch screen, and the it's slim and it's fast.
Yeah,
and
buy it now before an injunction goes against it from Apple, right?
That may be one of the reasons that I am trying very hard to do it.
Grab it fast.
All right. Anyway, but yes, the important things for people that were a fan of the PSP, you know, all six of you, are the PlayStation Portable downloadable games are available. The PlayStation Mini games are available. The PlayStation 1 Classics will still work, and everything from the PlayStation Store will
now
work.
Now, our chat room Calisynth has said it's $250, which in theory is like $245, but then add to that the Australian markup because of distance and size of population, which is what's the company? Lenovo was going on. There was a big article about them a couple of weeks ago that were saying the reason why stuff is more expensive here has got nothing to do with the exchange rate. Mm. It's got to do with the fact that there's transport cost. There's a smaller population, which means less units are sold. There's a whole calculation that goes into this, which means that it'll probably end up costing about $1,000.
Yeah.
No, I'm joking. Somebody, Callisynth has actually said it's probably going to be about $300.
Yeah, exactly, which is fine. And I will be lining up on day one to get mine just like everyone else. The other important thing, which I thought was probably one of the coolest things, is Sony has sat down and realized one really cool thing, which is that they sell this console, it's a great device, everybody keeps plugging into TVs, and they want to dominate the market.
They do.
So they sat down and went, you know what we're going to do? We want 3D in every household so that we can start pushing 3D technology. Okay, not a huge fan of that concept, but still.
And also could be a flawed concept because there was a study that came out. This is actually more of a film, actually. But there was a study that came out last week, I think it was, that actually said ticket sales on 3D have dropped dramatically. Mm. And in fact, the latest 3D film, which was... give me a second. It's coming back to me. There was a big one that just... Oh, Kung Fu Panda in America. 2D prices outnumbered 3D prices, and they were really, really surprised by this. No, because this is a genuinely made in 3D anime film. And they're basically saying people are starting to get tired of the gimmick. The glasses, the gimmick, the price is a big factor. And you know what? 3D may be dying before it really got a chance to start.
But doesn't particularly bother me because the main reason I'm interested in 3D is because of amazing refresh rates. It's nice. It's beautiful on the eyes. And more importantly, Sony has sat down and gone, well, we want to obviously win all of these people over. So we're going to create the perfect 24-inch monitor with inbuilt speakers so that you can play PlayStation on this device on this TV, and we're going to make it a ridiculous price of $500. Now, unfortunately, we go through all the standard calculations.
Yeah, $4,000 here, yeah.
Yeah. But the important thing is it is a beautiful-looking screen.
And
it's 24-inch.
And the best feature. Let's talk about this best feature for a minute.
All right, and the cool fact that you will be able to not run split screen, but split the screen in half.
Because it has
two
concurrent images running for 3D, if you play it in 2D, your glasses can separate out those two individual streams. So two players could sit side by side and see two different screens.
Mm.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
That is probably the best thing about this thing.
Mm.
That is the thing that I just think. And the purchase price of the TV actually includes glasses, which is something you don't get with most 3D TVs.
Yeah.
So I have to say, Sony was right on the money with this one. The only complaint I have, and we've talked about this, and we disagree on this, but I think I want to see bigger units. I want to see the big units come out. You know what
but
I mean?
Again, it's for personal use and it's for gaming. And like I've said, it's not meant for, like, I mean, gamers, like gamers shouldn't be playing on a big TV in
unless
the lounge.
You're old like me. And you
no,
know what?
No, but you do it because it's the family device and it sits in the lounge with the couch.
Oh, but I'd do that
like
even if I was by myself because I like having a big TV and sitting back from it because I've got old eyes. And do you know what was really interesting? A study came out from America this week, not in our show notes because I just remembered it actually. A study came out, they actually did the latest survey on the average age of gamers. Did you see this?
Mm.
The average age of gamers as of this year in America. Now, considering we share the same demographic as America, it's probably the same here. Mm. The average age of gamers is now officially 37 years old. And we still don't have an R rating in this country. So
yeah.
Anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out there.
No, that's fine. It's good. Anyway, it's a beautiful looking monitor. And for someone that prefers to work on something that is no bigger than 32, I reckon if we get it for, say, $600-$700, like, hopefully we will.
Look, it's an amazing price for
lining up
yeah, and
to get it.
Watch your Blu-ray movies and everything else through it. So it's going to be an amazing TV. There's no doubt about it. Look, Sony makes great TVs. I have no problem with Sony TVs. So the fact that this is stock built for the PlayStation really is... I can see package deals coming out. I can see the box with buy your PlayStation 3 and your TV all in one box, you know?
Mm.
So, yeah, I can see this happening very, very soon. All right, that leaves Nintendo.
Yes. Now, Nintendo, funnily enough, and I never thought I'd say this out loud, but probably... No, actually, I said this last year as well. Probably had the best out of the group.
I'm excited about this.
Reggie, who is one of their lead spokesperson, is the scariest-looking person on the planet. And I wish we could run a picture for you guys, but I'll find one quickly today.
A what? A what?
of the main guy that the main guy that does their TV thing. He is just really scary looking. Anyway, so Wii U was obviously the huge announcement. Now, when I say Wii U, I'm not making fun of you, and I'm not trying to be funny, but realistically, when you have such a dumb name, people are going to run wild with it, and good on them, because realistically, they should.
Nintendo's had a problem with naming for a while now. So. But the device itself is pretty damn cool. Although, to say that the actual machine itself looks a lot like a first-generation Xbox 360 is an understatement, considering it's just a white box with a slot.
Yes, but so we have a wonderfully Xbox-ish looking console, which you saw on screen before, which plugs into the dumbest and ugliest looking controller on the planet. There, I said it.
However,
it is fucking disgusting.
However, the device is completely backwards compatible with all your old Wii devices, so you can still use all your Wiimotes and nunchucks and everything else.
But they'll only work for the old games. It's the same as the other ones do, because realistically, Wii U is all going to use the touch screen in the middle of the device. Now, it's the size of a fridge. It has controller sticks at opposite ends of the controller, obviously for the hardcore demographic right there. And the touchscreen in the middle fills in the gap. Now, this is counterproductive. How many times do I have to tell Wii this? The realistic thing is, we designed the controller to be the way that Xbox and PlayStation controllers are, and all this Move and Kinect technology hasn't worked for one defining reason. We want a game controller to be quick, responsive, and easy to use.
And accurate.
This whole concept of touch technology is fine. I don't mind it. I don't need it in the middle of my controller. It just doesn't work, and I am still going to get it, and I'm still going to play it. So I'm not being one of these people.
Yeah, I mean,
first
thing my family said, because we've got our Wii downstairs, and Nikki and my lovely wife Katie and I like playing, you know, certain games on the Wii and stuff like that. And you know, we said, you know, next year we'll trade in the whole console, and you know, pick up a Wii U, because we can still play all the old Wii games that we like to play. But look, the bottom line is, the biggest selling point of this entire console is the idea they show
that
it in
it's
the,
Wii.
They show and it, well, and they show it in the trailer where he comes in and says, "I want to watch the TV now." So the kid pushes the button and brings the game from the TV onto the little touchpad, and so he can walk off and play by himself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or sit on the couch and ignore his dad.
And all I could think when I saw that trailer was, why didn't they integrate that into 3DS? So that you could use a console as a console, but if you wanted to, you could actually drop it to your 3DS. That way you wouldn't have to have this new stupid controller.
Yeah, well, you know? Look, I mean, Nintendo is great at creating markets and markets of things that are close but not identical. So
I don't think this will sell as well as the original Wii. I think this is going to confuse the crap out of people.
I think that it's an interesting move because...
You know what I'm seeing here?
Yeah.
GameCube.
Yeah. Because of the size of the controller. Yeah. We are obsessed with this.
Nintendo,
Nintendo are just obsessed with creating the most disgusting, unmarketable brand controllers ever. And they just got lucky with the Wii.
Yeah.
And they've been running with it. And it's so interesting to me because it's like touch technology was the selling point. It was all about the interaction between the person and the console. It was dragging people off the couch. And then they bring out this.
Yeah, no, I agree. Look,
their entire market.
One feature that I thought was kind of neat with this, once again, the controller is too big, but I thought one of the features was kind of neat. The idea is there, the controller is not, but the idea that if you were playing like an action game and you had a sniper rifle, you could actually have the sniper scope on the small screen. So you've got the main game playing, but you've got the sniper scope in your small screen. Interesting idea. I don't know how well it'll play, you know? Yeah. So I'm curious to see what this thing is like. I actually think that... they've had a massive boost with the Wii, and I think they have gotten a little bit cocksure of themselves, and I think this is going to take a dump. But it's going to be interesting to see how this thing goes. Now, what I thought was really interesting was they're finally high def.
Yeah. 1080p compatible.
About time, and it's got dual core processors in it. Mm. So it's going to be a fast machine. It's going to be a pretty machine.
Yeah, sure.
No doubt about that. But all I can say is they're playing catch-up at this point.
Yeah.
So... anyway, all right, so anything else at E3?
No, and I want to say, in true style of Nintendo, they showed off proprietary technology through creating another Zelda game. Well done, guys. Real hardcore, pushing the window kind of stuff. And the other thing is, for anybody that was watching that and thought the graphic looked amazing, which it probably actually will, but I just want to put this out there because I think Nintendo needs to be knocked down a peg. None of their third-party software they were showing off with videos was actually anything running on the actual machine itself. It was all other consoles content. So, Nintendo, do not get points for graphics until I've seen it running something apart from Zelda. And I'm done.
We're still waiting for goddamn Star Wars games. Decent Star Wars games.
Oh, man. And you just know? Quickly, Star Wars Kinect just looks so silly.
Have they released any new stuff on that? Because the initial push, we all kind of went, yeah, that looks great. And now it's falling
and
apart.
And then I saw somebody playing it, and then that was it.
Oh, dear. Oh, yeah. Well. Okay.
Yes, that's right, James. It has only been 7 minutes since the last Zelda game. Yeah.
All right, we're running way late today. All right, let's just kick through a couple of stories that I'm going to call the world of geek, because it can only be described that way. These are some of the links that Delta sent through. Delta did all these links for us, but we're not going to have time to go through them all, unfortunately, because E3 and Apple has taken...
Oh, come on, man. They were big things.
They're big things, and they've taken our time. We have a couple things, though. We'll pick the eyes out of these. I just got to say this one, though. When you go to bed at night, you're in a committed relationship now.
Yes.
When you go to bed at night, do you tend to sleep with your head in the small of her back?
No,
neither do I. And I've been married for a long time. And yet this pillow has come out called the booty pillow, which is supposed to simulate the small of a woman's back and her butt. And all I can say, I've got a picture up on screen for those who, and if our audio listeners, you can check up the show notes. And all I can think is, okay, this is supposed to give you the comfort of sleeping in the small of your woman's back. When has anybody ever slept in the small of your woman's back? That's what I want to know.
That sounds mean and also very uncomfortable.
And she looks pissed off.
She's like, dude, what the fuck?
But better than that picture, same article. Go check this article out. I'm going to put this up for Josh. I like this picture because it just looked creepy. Are you ready? What is wrong with...
I love the fact that it's leopard print.
It's a leopard print booty pillow, and the couple are staring lovingly in each other's eyes while groping the butt of the pillow.
Swingers.
I just thought that was such a creepy photo. All right, so, yeah, I don't think...
Swingers are creepy people.
Man. Well, there you go. I don't think the booty pillow is exactly something that's going to take off. And Freak in our chat room said, who the hell does that? All right, so, now, Josh, you and I have both done IT support in our time. I just thought Geeks Are Sexy had this picture up, which is basically what we've all suspected for a long time from IT support, and this is how they deal with it. They have a spin wheel, which I thought, I can just picture this happening in an IT support desk. They spin it, and some of your choices are things like, have you tried upgrading it? Or, well, that is a problem, isn't it? Is it plugged in? These are all the stock answers that you hear from an IT service desk, and this is called the Wheel of Responses. And I just thought that was very, very cute. Whether it's real or not, that's a whole different issue. It just looked funny. All right. Now, Callison in our chat room says, I think that wheel is inaccurate because every option isn't, have you tried restarting it? which is very true.
The problem that I have with IT support now is it is all just reading things off a card. So you don't actually get any support at all, because you can't have support from somebody that's reading from a piece of paper, especially when you know what you're talking about. The amount of times, dude, speaking to IINet support, God bless them, because they were tried to be the nicest they possibly could, but it's hard to be nice to a person who knows you're just reading from a piece of card. The amount of times that I have had to deal with people being like, have you tried turning it on and off? I'm like, motherfucker, if you don't stop asking me the dumb questions when I've already explained I know what I'm doing, it's like, where do I get my TCP/IP protocol information from? And they're like, did you try turning it on and off? I'm like, it's not.
Delta Knight in our chat room, and also who does all of our links for us, has said that his favorite one on that wheel is the one that says, let me Google that for you. It's true. I love that. All right. The mothership really has landed. I thought I'd just show you this picture really quickly. Now, if you are listening to the audio show, there is a video attached to this as well. Go watch the video. It's fascinating. Steve Jobs actually went to the Cupertino Council to deliver the plans for this. And it was so funny because they were just falling all over him. You know, it was amazing. I think he could just about bend them to anything he wanted. Because let's face it, Apple is the largest taxpayers in Cupertino.
Yeah.
This is the new proposed Apple headquarters. Apple has slowly been buying land over the last couple of years. In fact, part of this land is the old HP complex, which has moved out, and they've moved away. Apple has bought up all this land, and they are basically proposing to build this huge circular building that will hold 12,000 employees. This is like... we're talking like Pentagon-sized building here, right? But it's completely green. It has tons of surrounding green. They're actually planting 6,000 trees around it. They're going to beautify
the area. So it'll be difficult to get in and out of.
Pretty much. It's got all underground parking. It's all really...
Oh, really? So underground areas, giant round building.
Yeah.
How is 12,000 people and sustain them?
When the zombie apocalypse comes, you know where they'll all be staying.
No, I was more meaning this is seeming more and more like a church.
And I actually love the fact that it's huge and round, but it's only 4 stories high. So it's actually very low to the ground. It actually is just a giant ring. Building. It's got restaurants and all sorts of stuff in there. It's a beautiful looking building. It's actually, architecturally, it's a beautiful looking building. Be very curious. They actually said that they want to have the plan submitted as soon as possible. They want to break ground next year and they want to have it open by 2015. I think it's intriguing. I'm always looking, and they're saying it's going to be one of the nicest corporate HQs ever built, basically, is what they're saying. Which, it's Apple. Why wouldn't it be? You know? I mean, that's what they do. Personal holodecks. We all like the idea of the Star Trek holodeck. This article came up that Delta sent through. Once again, Geeks Are Sexy had the article. And it looks something like this. It's called the Immersive Cocoon. It's a giant, shiny black hamster ball. They like hamster balls, don't they? Up here, this is the Immersive Cocoon for geeks. It is a brilliant concept design. Basically, what happens is you sit inside it, and it projects the entire inside of the ball.
Wow.
So you're basically immersed. It looks a little bit like this from the outside for our chat room. And then when you go inside, you have a completely immersive experience.
I've got to say...
I want that.
I want that.
I want that. Could you imagine gaming in that thing? I'm liking the sounds of this. It's not quite holodeck, but we're getting there. We're getting there. I think this is the pervert's best friend. You know those wankers that walk around, for our American listeners, you know those idiots, those masturbators, you know, who walk around and they've got the little Bluetooth shit in their ear all the time, which I can't stand.
Yeah.
Well, this is a new one. This is called the Loxy. I have a picture of it for our chat room here. There it is. And basically, not only is it a Bluetooth headset, but it has a camera built into the front of it.
Oh, great.
And can live stream and send to Facebook and all these sort of things. And apparently it's iCloud support as well. Well, all I can think is this is the pervert's wet dream.
Oh, man, iCloud support, that's not good. Dude,
can't be good.
Can I just put this out here? Since, like, I don't know, 1976 or 1970-something, we've had this thing called stereo. And music's created in stereo now.
Yeah.
We don't need to go back to mono. These people that listen to music via Bluetooth, you are my enemy.
Unless you have the Bluetooth stereo headphones, which not everything supports yet.
And it sounds like crap compared to anything.
Because I've got Bluetooth speakers in the car, which actually output in stereo as well. Yeah. And there are Bluetooth headphones that you can get, which will actually do this as well. But on the most part, the people who wear that little dongle thing in their ear... these aren't audiophiles anyway. They're listening for phone calls. But if they are listening to music on that, I agree with you. They're not going to hear any stereo surround.
Yeah.
It's going to be downgraded to mono at best, you know? Anyway. But I think the camera actually kind of makes me go, oh, so this guy could just walk around just kind of looking at down girls' tops and, you know? That's kind of scary. But, you know, if he's going to wear his camera, your girlfriend could wear her solar panels. And this is the new solar bikini. That has been invented. And so I like the way the Geeks Are Sexy says the solar power bikini, because why not? And apparently you can even get it wet. It says you can go swimming in it. Just don't plug anything into it while it's still wet. I love that. Make sure you try out. And if you're wondering where you plug into this thing, it's in the waistband. There it is. There's the pictures.
Yeah.
It looks really comfortable, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, totally.
I love the fact that she's holding a circa 5 year ago iPod as well. You know, it's like, it's all very, dude. Also, it's really ugly.
Yeah.
When you actually look at it close
up. They'll make nicer designs. It's a concept.
And I just look at it and go, and apparently if you are wet and you plug it in, you won't even feel it. It doesn't put out that much of a charge. So I can think that's going to charge an iPod very, very, very slowly. If you're not even feeling a charge off it, that's really slow. Okay, what else have we got that we can... Oh, is this the most stupid law that you've ever heard of? This one just got me. This is a law that is being passed in Tennessee that is basically saying... offensive pictures are now illegal. Now, why is that a stupid law? Because who determines what's offensive? We're not saying nude. We're not saying pornography. Offensive pictures would be made illegal.
What?
So if you were offended by somebody, scratching their butt, and they put a picture up of that, that is considered illegal.
It's going to be that whole thing where it'll be the 60-year-old that has nothing better to do but to censor the world that runs around sending out emails about how they're offended.
According to the article on Gizmodo, it says the law prohibits the online distribution of any image that might, quote-unquote, frighten, intimidate, or cause emotional distress to someone who sees it. Now, that last part is the problem.
Yeah.
The emotional distress is too open-ended. People have used emotional distress on so many different cases for trying to sue people and get, accepted or rejected, depending on how stupid it might be. But that is such an open-ended law that how could you ever enforce this?
Yeah.
I just think this is ridiculous. And all I can say is stop right now, Tennessee. Get a grip.
Too late.
Anyway, so stupid laws, holodecks. What else we got? How about the failed ninja? Did you hear about this guy? I just love this article. A guy apparently stole a car, drove it through the window of an Apple store, but then chickened out and ran away. But the whole thing done while dressed as a ninja.
So
apparently the guard that was on duty was not hurt. But it says here the suspect was dressed in what a witness told 107.5 KZL resembled a ninja suit, drove through the store's plate glass windows early Friday, then ran away without taking anything. The security guard in the store was not hurt by the incident. So basically thought this was a good idea, obviously, smashed the glass and then panicked. And ran away. And all I can say is, wow, you need to go back to ninja school, dude.
Somebody, no one needs an Apple computer that much.
No. And I think if you're going to go through the effort of actually driving a car through the front window, at least take something.
Mm.
You're going to go to jail either way now, so you might as well at least take something. Mm. All right, let's move on because we are running very late and say weird food this week. This is just a what-the-fuck moment of the week. Delta sent this through. I talked to my lovely wife, Katie, who's a scientist. She has heard of this. This is legit. I think it is just weird. But in China, apparently, they are genetically creating cows that can produce human milk. Now, let's step through this for a second. This article comes from Gizmodo, but of course it has been fed on from Sky News and Fox. Basically, it says, amidst the concern about the fact that cow's milk is not good for you, Chinese scientists have found a way to fix the problem. What they're doing is they're genetically engineering cows by putting in human genome basically into cow fetuses. So when the cows are born, they're actually producing something more akin to human milk. Now, I think they're putting human genes into the cows. Now, they're basically, they're not creating human milk from a cow because how can you? It's still coming from a cow, so it's still going to be cow's milk. But apparently it contains a lot of the stuff that human breast milk contains, so it's better for babies, is the concept. So, quoting from their article, it says, researchers at the Agriculture University in Beijing managed to produce milk with the same healthful properties as mother's milk. The milk itself was taken from a herd of 300 transgenic cows bred after inserting the human milk-making gene into bovine embryos. This is just the weirdest ass shit I've ever heard in my life.
Wow.
I think this is one of those things where you sit and go, wow. And according to taste testers, described the product as sweeter and stronger than the regular old cow stuff. Now, according to the person who actually did all this, he actually says, what's his name? His name is Professor Li Ning. Said, quote, there are 1.5 billion people in the world who don't get enough to eat. It's our duty to develop science and technology, not to hold it back. We need to feed people first before we consider ideals and convictions. And I want to add on that editorially, or consequences.
Yeah, or the fact that if we start creating food for too many of the people, then those people start surviving.
And our population grows up. And, you know, there is a reason natural selection is an amazing concept.
It's the problem that I've got, and I don't want to sound like, I mean, you know, it's tragic.
IMS Face says regular old cow stuff because cow's milk isn't cool anymore. Right.
I am more of a fan of the thing that Freak found and put up. Sorry, Callison's found and put up in the thing, which is instead of worrying about important things like people surviving and stuff like that. No, I'm all for this whole link about making dogs that are neon. I think that's much more interesting and exciting. That shit'll sell on eBay. Milk, breast milk.
James from Melbourne says cow's milk is fine. We have been drinking it for 2,000 years.
Well, yeah, but I think they're looking for like a substitute for food.
They're actually looking for a substitute for feeding babies, which is where the breast milk actually contains all those things. But the thing is, it's not going to be the same because it still doesn't contain the mother's antibodies, which are what protect the child. Yeah. It has the nutritional content, but there is no substitute for breast milk. Feeding them this altered cow's milk is no different from giving them formula.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why this is a necessity. You know,
they're just trying to come up with things which are easy enough to use as sort of reasons to do this sort of stuff, so that they can get around the laws that we have.
And Josh and James from Melbourne have said we have powdered milk for babies. You know, it's like yes. No, I think this entire thing is just scary. I think as soon as we start genetically altering animals, as soon as we start genetically altering stuff, we don't know the consequences. It's like the concept of genetically altered food crops, where we sit there and go, okay, but we'll separate them. You can't separate them. Once genetically altered food crops are out there, they cross pollinate. And say it happens. What is it? There's that wonderful saying in Jurassic Park: nature finds a way.
Yeah.
You know, it's like nature will always find a way. And I'm not saying I'm against technology. I'm just saying we need to think about things before we jump. You know, this guy's saying we just have to do it and not consider stuff. No, crap. Consider first.
Yeah, exactly.
Consider what you're doing, then create it, you know?
Delta's saying we should just start milking women then.
Why not? Wasn't there actually a... Didn't we do this on the show? I thought we did.
Yeah, no, let's not go back. That was really not right.
Where they actually had those women who were actually... Yes. Well, you know. Whatever.
Thank you, Dave.
All right, let's move on to our Geek Picks of the Week. We're going to have to make this kind of short because we do have a guest coming in for film, actually. This week, our Pick of the Week is kind of an odd one because it's not really a Pick of the Week. But it's been 16 years since Duke. And I want to question this. It's been 16 years since Duke. Why in the game...
14.
In the game, they keep saying 12.
No, it's 14 years.
It was 1996 that the Duke came out.
Mm.
And it's now 2001. 2011, I should say. Mm. So 1996 to 2011. Somebody do math.
No. You're saying since Duke came out.
Yeah.
No.
They
started development 2 years after that.
Oh, no, my friend. In 1996, after Duke came out, there were already magazine articles from 3D Realm saying the next installment will be coming out soon.
No. And exactly. There were a magazine article saying it was coming out.
Yeah.
The design and creation of Duke Nukem Forever did not start until 2 years after that.
All right. Okay. Let's say 14 years. Even 14 years. Why in the game do they keep saying 12?
What?
In the game, they keep saying 12 years.
Because you have to knock off... Oh, God, I've read about this. It's something to do with the fact that you have to knock off a few years because of the fact that the people that were involved weren't involved until that period of time.
It's bizarro. Anyway, let's say after 14 years, Duke Nukem Forever has finally hit the shelves.
Yes.
I used to tell stories of a man who saved the world. A man whose very presence sent aliens running back to their motherships. A man who disappeared without a trace. When the invaders came back, they came back angry. They tore our planet apart, bit by bit. But they made one mistake. They shouldn't have gone after our women.
Damn it. Why do they always take the hot one? Right in the jewels. Rest in pieces. What? Did you think I was gone forever? Hell, I'd still hit it.
The game, Duke. Was it any good?
Yeah, but after 12 f***ing years, it should be.
And we actually have Duke Nukem Forever.
It's not fake.
It's not fake. It's real. There's a disc in here. It's real. It's launched. Yeah. All right. Now, Duke Nukem Forever finally hit the shelves. Josh and I have had a chance to play it. We haven't finished it, obviously. It only came out yesterday. But we have played. We both put in a good, 3 hours?
I put 4 or 5. 4 hours, again, whatever. I'm playing on hard.
You're playing on hard. And it's interesting that we both put in this many hours and we're actually at about exactly the same place in the game. So I thought for this week's Pick of the Weeks, we really should just talk about a little bit about Duke, whether it's worth buying or not, has the game lived up to the hype or not, and we'll just give a little mini review. Now, I'm not really experienced with rating or reviewing games. It's not what I do. Josh does. It's not what I do, so my review is not going to be like your typical review of a game. I can't review the whole game because we haven't played it all, but I'm just going to give you some first thoughts.
That's really what we're here for.
And my mother always taught me, give an upstroke before a downstroke. So let's give an upstroke on this. What did you like about the game, Josh? The face. All right, I guess I'll start this section.
No, I got this.
The box art is... No, even the box art is not
good.
The statue's good.
Using the shotgun for the first time. That was good.
That's nice and satisfying. Yeah, no, I agree. Look. All right, so I've probably got more positive to say than Josh does. For me, you do. For me, it's a nostalgia trip. I was a massive, massive Duke Nukem 3D fan. In fact, 2 days ago, I actually played about 3 hours of Duke Nukem 3D again on the Xbox just to get myself primed and found myself enjoying it thoroughly. And so I was really, really, really looking forward to Duke Nukem Forever. And there are aspects of this game that I enjoy. I like the fact that it's still as raunchy as it ever was. I still like the fact that it's completely misogynistic and stupid and just ridiculous. And I like hearing him talk. There isn't enough of it in the game, unfortunately. All that being said, and I've had fun. I have had fun. In a frustrating kind of way, I've had fun. The downstrokes on this game are that they've overhauled it too much. There's too much anticipation, for one, and they've overhauled a game that worked in its original form. It was fun. It was an old-school style first-person shooter. They've tried to bring Duke, an old-style character, old-style gameplay, into a modern game engine and tried to make it fit within like a Gears of War-type game, and it doesn't work. Duke needs to have that old-fashioned kind of feel. People who played Duke and were obsessed by Duke, my generation, people just under me, like in their 30s and so forth, like Nathan as well, you sit there and go, we wanted that format of Duke to play Duke. We want to just run through, shoot the crap out of everything, and basically have that kind of open play. And each level, you go, start here, and you have to find your way out to the exit. You find the exit, you break into the next level, right? Great, this is all kind of worked. Doesn't work like that in Duke Nukem Forever. In Duke Nukem Forever, they've gone for more of a linear approach. You have to follow things and do things in a certain order, and there's no way of going back on anything once you've gone through. And that doesn't work for Duke, you know? They've also made it, they've taken away some of the fun of it. Duke could carry up to 9 weapons, and you could shift between all your various guns for the different enemies attacking you. You can only carry 2 now. So you have to make choices, which is something you have to do in a lot of other modern games. I don't want to do it with Duke. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to be able to carry a rocket launcher, a shotgun, a rail gun, a BFG. You know, you want to carry all the various things on you at all times. What I'm trying to say is what I really want to see was the old Duke Nukem game with better graphics and a new story is what you really want to play, you know? And that's not what we're getting here. We're getting a completely revamped Duke Nukem that is trying to fit modern-day game conventions into a very old-fashioned game. Mm. And they don't blend very well. I think that's what I'm trying to say. All right, your negatives. It sucked.
No. Look, mine is going to be incredibly well-versed. I've spent a lot of time thinking about this, dude. Like, I haven't talked to anybody about Duke. Like, I've had it for a while. I'm not going to say how long. But I've had it for a while, and I've played my section of it over a series of 1 or 2 days and then spent a lot of time thinking about it. And my conventions for Duke and my reasons for hating it are very simple. Realistically, this game shouldn't exist. Gearbox, my two positives are Gearbox have done the best that they possibly could with something that shouldn't exist. They've also tried to be as faithful and create as good and as funny a storyline as they possibly could with the material that they have in front of them. Problem is, the world has changed and gaming has changed, right? Your argument, and I don't try and defeat what you're trying to say because I get what you wanted, right?
Yeah.
But reality is gaming's changed and gaming has no interest in a game like this anymore. Not just because, you know, you couldn't take this game now, put nicer graphics on the original 3D and re-release it because gamers would find it boring. You're not going to capture the modern audience because the modern audience is going to look at it and go, I don't want this. This has no interest in me. If I wanted this kind of game, I would go back and play an old game. I'm not into this. Modern stipulations in gaming require fast gameplay, depth, cinematics, storyline. They've tried to make Duke into this. The problem is Duke doesn't translate.
No.
Even visually, he doesn't translate into a modern audience.
I disagree with you about that, though, because I think if you look at, as an example, the Lego games, right? They follow the old Duke formula. And a lot of adults play those games, not just children, right?
No. But, dude, we're talking about a first-person shooter here.
Yeah,
right?
But my point is that after 14 years, if you'd actually put something like that out, it would actually seem fresh and new now because everybody is doing the Modern Warfare, Gears of War. They're all the same.
You can do run-and-gun games. That's not my argument. Yeah. My argument is that Duke is a simple game.
Yeah, absolutely.
People don't, if it was released as an arcade title, fine. But a $100 title that ran exactly the same way as the old Duke did with better graphics is not going to sell because people want depth. They want... Look what it's up against. You can't launch a game like that at $100 and expect it to make money.
Well, I think the $100 price tag is also a problem.
But... Yes, but that's what I'm saying. Duke cannot translate into a modern-day game because people will put it up against modern-day games. You would have to release it as a back alley title. You would have to launch it on a live or on Steam at a reduced price or something like this. Duke cannot be a modern $100 game because he doesn't have the componentry that would sell a $100 game. That's the problem with the concept. It's like it's been too long. If it had released in like 2005 or 2006, it would have had a chance because, as they were saying, the graphics look like it's from that era. If this had been released back then, gaming was at that stage.
Yeah.
But the problem is they're trying to sit in a balance between incredibly sort of confident, you know, reproduction of what people liked about the original game and trying to sell it to a modern audience by trying to hype it up and add all these huge boss battles and, you know, hilarious storylines and directions and 20 hours of gameplay because that's what gamers want. But that's the problem. They've tried to make it everything you've ever wanted in a game, and it's just not possible.
Yeah, they've tried to put too much into this game. I also have to say that gameplay is really hurt by the fact that the load times are astronomically long. We're both playing it on 360, and each level there's this break, and you wait, and you wait, and you wait, and then if you die, you have to go back and you have to wait all over again.
The other thing I wanted to point out, man, to sort of strengthen my argument against the fact that this could never happen is, as an example, the way you and me feel about this game, even though, you know, like we sit maybe on opposite ends of the thing, we both want to like this, right? Take someone like Dave Kay, who violently hates this game because he's like, I didn't play original games and I'm just calling it as a fucking game. And he's like, I would give it lower than a 3 if I thought I could get away with it. That kind of an attitude. I'm not saying that's the score he's giving. I have no idea what score he's giving. Yeah. But he hates this game. He's like, this game isn't funny. It's not graphically impressive. The gameplay is repetitive. There's nothing in there for me. I have played better 3 out of 10 games.
Yeah, this game relies on nostalgia.
Exactly. And that's my problem is you cannot bring a game from that generation,
which comes back to that, which comes back to that original argument, which is if it's going to rely on nostalgia, go all the way. You know what
exactly,
I mean?
Exactly, but that's what I'm saying. It should have been released as Duke Nukem HD. It should have just been Duke Nukem 3D HD. If you had released that, you would have won people over. And you know what? Then you could have tried for a Duke forever. Because you would have had this new audience that are playing
that's
the original
game I like
reinvented.
That.
This is never going to sell because honestly, I walked into the room and I saw all those paintings on the wall of Duke beside famous
like
people.
Like Tomb Raider Anniversary.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, you've got all these, you know, Duke wonderful things and you've got all these posters that have him with famous people. All I thought is everything in this room looks ugly. Because you can't bring somebody with a square jaw and somebody with a ridiculous belt buckle and try and make him relevant today because people are going to look at it and go, I don't get what you're trying to sell me because it's an art form that...
I think it's going to bomb, quite frankly. I think it's going to die. As somebody said, it's got a really soft launch. There's been no promotion about it at all. It's just like there was all this promotion up about it for the pre-orders and then it all just disappeared.
Exactly, because everybody wanted to like it, but the second it all started to flood out, and the same reason that the embargo date was the date of the game's release.
Yeah, and the fact that the demo was not released.
Exactly.
Only to those select few pre-order people got that demo, which is ridiculous. I was looking for a demo for a week prior to the game, but they didn't want you playing it.
No.
They you know, so I think it's sad. I think it's sad. Look, I'm going to continue playing it. I want to finish it. I want to get through it. I want to at least get to strippers.
Well, look, you have a game with 18 hours of gameplay, and it's the kind of game that it should have been short and sweet, not long and strung
agreed.
Out. And people that I know that are playing it, that are huge Duke fans, are going, I just want to finish it. Like, it's become an actual grind because they're just like, I don't care
anymore.
Well, and
as an example, we were talking earlier before the show, there is a boss battle early in the game where you fight the mothership, which is astronomically hard for an early boss battle. And I was playing
even as a decent gamer, I had to restart that at least
20
times.
And like
hard.
I was actually playing at normal because I like to try at least pride myself on thinking I can play most games at normal. I don't play it hard. I think that's ridiculous. But I play at normal. And so I got through got to that level and I just kept dying. And every time I died, it had that astronomically long load to get back into it. And then I would die. And then I'd long load and then I would die. And I think this is 2 hits and you're dead. And I thought this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. So I actually had to go back, restart the game, dropping it down a level, down to the piece of cake mode, got through the whole first half of it again, got to that boss battle, and still spent an hour trying to get that thing killed.
James from Melbourne's put out a really interesting point, though. He said, strippers and games are as antiquated as buying porn on DVD. And no, I agree. And look, this is another problem, is it's like, if it had have sold in 2001, 2004, you still had that kind of leftover burnt out mentality of the 90s where this sort of stuff was new and funny and fresh because realistically we didn't put...
We have nudity in games now. It's not a big
exactly.
issue.
Exactly. And more than that, we have nudity in games that serves a purpose or a plot point. Yes, okay, maybe it's a very small thing and maybe it's still, you know, sort of being birthed.
Yeah.
But like Mass Effect and stuff like that, I still think they're relatively silly and unnecessary, but they put them in there... They put it in there because of the fact that they're trying to create something that's more than just silliness in games. The problem is silliness from games just doesn't sell.
Unless you're, as I say, unless you're going to go all the way and release a truly retro game.
Yeah.
Which is my argument, is I think that Duke Nukem, if they were had any hope of Duke Nukem being successful, it had to be released as a completely retro game.
Exactly. It needed to be. That's why I'm saying Duke Nukem HD was what they needed
to release. I think they needed to make Duke Nukem, they needed to release it on something like the Unreal Engine, yeah, rather than the Gears of War engine. I think they needed to go right back and really kind of play with it, you know, and make it much more like the original game. And then you would have had a game that you could have said is truly nostalgic. And you would have gone, this is the nostalgia. And the nostalgia value would have at least got you the market of those 37-year-old gamers.
Well, look, you've got the levels already built. You've got the designs already made. You've got the dialogue already in place. All you had to do was strip it and re-engine it. And based on the fact that it was a relatively simple game, maybe add just a few extra little things like being able to, you know, bank pipe bombs or something like that, like just give it a little washover with a few new aspects of gameplay, release that, and if people fall in love with it again, now there's your idea.
I haven't come across the pipe bombs in the new version yet, but apparently there's new controls for the pipe bomb. You were saying bank them. Apparently you can do that with this new game. You can actually throw out multiples before hitting the trigger, and I want to see this, but the problem is this game, we're put in, Josh and I have both put in, what, 3-4 hours on this game, and we still haven't gotten past basically three weapons.
Yeah.
And what I think is the weirdest thing of it all is you start the game with the Devastator. That's taken away from you. Then you go in and you're up with fists, and then you find the laser rifle, which is actually a really good weapon. I love the laser, and lots of ammo falling around for that all over the place. And then you go into the next level, and they bring down the thing, and they say, there's people out there, arm yourself, and they give you the pistol. And you go, I've just had a laser rifle.
Yeah.
What do I want the pistol for?
And the pistol is useless, and it's just...
Then you finally get the shotgun much later after going through this level where you are miniaturized and have to drive around a remote-control car, which, I'm sorry, is shades of the Mako from the first Mass Effect. It is the most tedious, long, drawn out level where you're driving around in a car that is so hard to control that you keep crashing into walls and stuff, and then you finally get your shotgun, and so you're not getting a shotgun until, I would say, even a good gamer like yourself, you're not getting a shotgun until 3 hours into the game, and you sit there and go, really? It's taken me that long to get a decent weapon?
Yeah.
And then the shotgun is a good weapon, but it's nowhere near as effective as the shotgun in the first one. It's Pig Cop in the first one was taken down.
Isn't that interesting? Because you think that it would be the most important thing to get right is to get the feeling of things like the guns right.
Yeah. Things like Pig Cops in the first game. Two shotgun shells took down a Pig Cop, right? In this one, I've pumped 3 or 4 shots into a Pig Cop before they come down. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it just feels like the weapons are underpowered. It feels like... look, I'm going to give it more time. I want to see what happens when we start getting freeze rays and pipe bombs and rocket launchers and all the other good things that are supposed to be coming. Yeah. But the fact that they've drawn this game out to 16 hours of gameplay says to me that I'm not going to be seeing this stuff for another 4 hours at least. You know, so, and that's a bit of a problem. We should be moving a lot faster than that. I had a rocket launcher in the second level of the first Duke game.
Yeah.
You know, sure, it was in a secret room, but you find it. Anyway, so that's Duke Nukem Forever. I'm going to actually say to you that, look, if you're nostalgic and you want to play it, go rent it. Don't buy it. All right. Or wait till it gets in the bargain bins, which I think will be 6 months from now. I think this is not going to take long to sink into the bargain bins.
No, exactly.
This will be out for $40 in a few months. It's just going to plummet in price because everybody's going to be overstocked. Because I saw JB when I was there. They had a whole row of them up there, and they're not going to sell that fast. So,
And it will become the laughing... Look, and you know what? Like I said to people, I'm just glad it's over. I'm glad that this whole Duke Nukem Forever thing is gone and that it failed and bombed because Duke is not a character. I wanted to remember him. It's like...
Do you know what I actually hope? And this is going to sound really weird, but I actually hope they develop another one. Because now the anticipation is gone. Now all of that is gone. They've got everything built. And then maybe they actually just quickly turn around and churn out another one, like they churn out Gears of War's game and stuff like that. Churn out one that
so
actually...
So we might end up with another Planet of the Babes?
Well, I was about to say, that actually fixes the problems that are in this game, like load times and linear levels and, you know, and they basically say, okay, well, we fucked that first one up, but let's see. Because I think there is life in the character, especially for people who are nostalgic for it, but we want cheaper, faster, easier to play. You know, we want... Do you know what
so
we want?
Basically,
oh, here's the big one. We want it to be fun.
So basically what you're saying is you want the complete opposite to producers.
I want complete opposite to producers.
You want a game which is quick, a game that's low in cost.
Yeah.
And you want something that is released after a game that bombs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Good luck with that.
Yeah. And it should come out as an arcade game for about 800 points.
Wonderful. Well, good luck with that. Moving right along, I think we should end the show.
We're going to end the show. We've got Katrina coming into our film show, so we'll end up now. That's our thoughts on Duke Nukem. It is a disappointing time, but look, I am, as much as we've bagged it out here, it is fun to kind of walk around. I like the execute command. That's probably my favorite command in the game, where you shoot somebody and then hit the X and just take their head off. I think that's wonderful. So, look, it's got moments. Yeah. Oh, shit, there goes my microphone this time. It has moments, it's just not complete. Okay, if you agree or disagree with anything we have to say, and look, if you liked Duke, tell us. Let us know what you liked about it. Feedback at geekactually.com, voicemail 02801-13167. Get our merchandise, join our fan page, join us on Twitter, follow our Facebook fan page, do whatever you want, anything. I don't care what it is. There is a follow us link right there on the front page of geekactually.com. You can find us in all the things that we do. You can watch us record the show live every Saturday starting at 12 p.m.-ish, Australian Eastern Standard Time, UTC plus 10, at geekactually.com/live is where you can watch us, join the chat room, get involved. And we also sometimes take calls and so forth. So if you watch us live, that's how you get involved, all right? Make sure you check out some of our friends, The Real Junkies, R-E-E-L Junkies, at WeekendRonan.com, their movie review site. They're a lot of fun. They drink tequila, talk about movies. They often disagree with us, and that's fine because everybody has an opinion on stuff, and it's a lot of fun. We've had Fox on one of our shows before. We've got to get more of them on. I got to get Greg on at some point because I really want to debate out Greg, because Greg and I seem to have a very different opinion on films. So I think we got to get Greg on at some point. Josh, you do another site and you can find out more details about this sort of stuff.
RodeoC.com. It's a gaming website. We do games and go out live at Tuesdays at 8 p.m.
There you go. The one thing I do like about the Duke Nukem Forever Balls of Steel edition is I got this lovely statue and all these little extras and dice and all this sort of stuff. And then I can trade the game in and keep all the good stuff. I like that about it. All right, so so you got your gaming site. Josh Spencer over at attackninja.blogspot.com has done our caricatures for our website and our cover art. Always check his stuff out. He's really good, really talented artist, and he doesn't just do caricatures. Go check his stuff out. It's really good. And we want to thank Grant Noy for our opening theme music, because we don't give him enough credit, and he is a very talented person, and we hopefully will get him on the show soon, because he is also an avid gamer and a big movie buff, so he fits into all categories. We want to thank our chat room for joining us, as always. We want to thank our listeners for listening to us, as always, and we are going to get out of here. Now, I say this, and I'm not actually preparing anything, so I should start preparing up end credit music and stuff, because we've been screwing this up every week for like 3 weeks now. All right, so Josh, I'm going to say thank you very much, and join us for our film show. Remember, you can find that at Film Actually on iTunes, or just find all your back episodes on the website geekactually.com. We have two shows running simultaneously. All right, guys, we're going to get out of here to steal from Delta Knight one more time, and many more in the future, I'm sure. Geek on, everybody. We'll be right back.